Ironsides eventually said. Do you have an update on that lifebuster?
We're still on it, sir, Cloak said. But the bomber is well defended. 10 ships.
Understood, Ironsides said.
Sir,
Cloak said.
It is going faster than ordinary bomber speed, and it just sped up. If we aren't careful, it will get within blast range of Alta.
Engage them, Ironsides said.
With only scouts?
Yes, Ironsides said. I felt so powerless. As a child, listening to war stories, my head had been full of drama and excitement, glory and kills. But today, I could hear the strain in the voices as flight leaders watched their friends die. I heard explosions over the channel and winced at each one. Jorgen and FM were out there somewhere. I should be helping, protecting. I closed my eyes. Without really intending to, I performed Grand Grand's exercise, imagining myself soaring among the stars, listening for them, reaching. A dozen spots of white light appeared inside my eyelids. Then hundreds. I felt the attention of something vast, something terrible, shift toward me. I gasped and opened my eyes. The pinpricks of light vanished, but my heart thundered in my ears, and all I could think of was that inescapable sensation of things seeing me. Unnatural things. Hateful things. When I finally managed to put my attention back on the battle, Cloak was reporting a full-on conflict with the Lifebuster's guardships. Arturo turned a few frequencies and found their flight chatter. 12 scouts had been unified in a single flight for this battle. Arturo switched back and forth between the scout channel and the flight leader channel. Both battles raged, but finally, at long last, some welcome news came in.
Bomber destroyed, Cloak said. The Lifebuster bomb is in free fall, heading toward the ground. All scouts pull out. Overburn, now.
Her channel wavered and fuzzed. We waited, anxious. And I thought I could hear the sequence of 3 explosions. In fact, I was sure of it, echoing in the near distance. Scud. That had been close to Alta.
Cloak,
Ironsides asked. Nice work. She's dead, a soft voice said on the line. That was FM.
This is call sign, FM.
Cloak died in the blast. There are...
Sir, there are 3 of us left in the scout flight. The others died in the fighting.
Confirmed,
Ironsides said.
Stars accept their souls.
Should we return to the other battle? FM asked.
Yes.
All right. She sounded rattled. I looked toward the others, frustrated. Surely there was something we could do. Arturo, I said, doesn't your family have some private ships?
3 fighters, he said, down in the deep caverns. But as a rule, they don't get involved in DDF battles.
Even a desperate one like this? Kimmelin asked. Arturo hesitated, then spoke more softly.
Especially a battle like this. Their job is to protect my family if we have to evacuate. The worse things get, the less likely my parents would be to commit their ships.
And if we didn't ask them? Ned said. What if we just took the ships?
He and Arturo exchanged looks, then grinned. Both looked at me, and my heart trembled with excitement. To fly again, in a battle like this, like the Battle of Alta. The battle where my father had broken. It was too dangerous for me to be up there. What if I did what he did and turned on my friends? Take Kimmelin, I found myself saying.
You sure? Arturo asked.
I'm not, Kimmelin said.
She grabbed my hands.
Spin. You're better than I am. I'll just fail again.
My family's ships are in a secure cavern, Arturo said. It will take us at least 15 minutes to get them up the private ship elevator. That's not counting the part where we have to somehow sneak in and steal them.
I squeezed Kimmelin's hands. Quirk, I told her. You're the best shot I've ever seen. The best I've ever heard of. They need you. FM and Jorgen need you.
But you...
I can't fly, Quirk, I said. There's a medical reason I can't explain right now.
so you've got to go.
I squeezed her hands tighter.
I failed Hurl, she said softly. I'll fail the others.
No. The only way you fail, Kimmelin, is if you're not there. Be there. Her eyes watered, then she grabbed me in a hug.
Arturo and Ned rushed out of the room, and Kimmelin ran out after them.
I sank down into my seat and leaned against the table, crossing my arms and laying my head down. The radio chatter continued, including a new voice.
Flight Command, the woman's ragged voice said. This is Anti-Aircraft Gun Outpost 47. We're down, sir.
Down, Ironside said. What happened?
That blast from the lifebuster hit us, the woman said. Stars. I'm just crawling out of the mess now. I tore this radio off my CO's corpse. It looks like AA guns 46 and 48 are gone too. That bomb hit close. You've got a hole in your defenses, sir. Scud. 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 I need medical transports.
Understood, Outpost 47. Sending,
sir,
the gunner's voice said again.
Tell me you have that on radar.
What? I felt a chill.
Debris fall, the gunner said. North of here. Hold on a minute. I've got some binoculars.
I waited, tense, imagining a single gunner climbing over the wreckage of her destroyed gun emplacement.
I have visual on multiple Krell ships, the gunner said. A second group, coming down far away from the battle for the shipyard. Sir, they're coming in right where our defenses are out. Confirm, did you hear me?
We heard, Ironside said.
Sir, they're heading right for Alta. Scramble the reserves.
There were no reserves. The chill inside me became ice. Ironsides had committed everything we had to the battle for the shipyard, and now a second group of Krell had appeared from the sky, right where the bomb had knocked out our defenses. It was a trick. The Krell wanted this. They wanted to draw our fighters into a battle far from Alta. They wanted to convince us that all of the Krell ships were engaged, so that we threw everything we had at them. Then they dropped a lifebuster on our AA guns to open the path. That way, they could bring in more ships and another bomb. Boom. No more defiance.
Riptide flight, Admiral Ironside said. I want you back at Alta immediately, full speed.
Sir,
the flight leader said.
We can disengage, but we're a good 30 minutes out, even at Mag 10.
Hurry, she said. Get back here.
Too slow. I thought. Alta was doomed. There weren't any ships. There weren't any pilots. Except one. Chapter 49. Still, I hesitated. I'd decided not to go with Ned and the others because it was too dangerous. What about the defect? In that moment, Hurl's voice returned to me. A pact, she seemed to whisper. Brave until the end. No backing down, Spin. No backing down. Alta was in danger, and I was just going to sit here? Because I was afraid of what I might do? No. Because I didn't know, deep down, if I was a coward or not. Because I worried not only about the defect, but about whether I was worthy of flying. In that moment, the truth struck me hard. Like the Admiral, I was using the defect as an excuse to avoid facing the real issue. To avoid discovering for myself who I was. I stood up and dashed out of the restaurant. Forget the defect. They were going to drop a lifebuster to destroy both Alta and Igneous. It didn't matter if I was dangerous. The Krell were far, far more so. I raced down the street toward the base, a vague plan of going to Embot coalescing in my mind. But that would take too long. Besides, he'd shut himself down. I imagined bursting into the cavern, only to be confronted by a dead, empty piece of metal that wouldn't turn on. I stopped in the street, puffing, sweating, and looked out toward the hills. Then toward Alta Base. There was one other ship,
I dashed up the street and through the gates, flashing my cadet's pin to gain admittance. I turned right toward the launch pads and scrambled up to the ground crew, who were launching medical transports to go to the AA guns. The bulky, slow ships rose smoothly into the air on large acclivity rings. I spotted Dorgo, the ground crewman who often worked my ship, and ran up to him.
Skyward 10, Dorgo said. What are you?
The broken ship, Dorgo, I said, puffing. Skyward 5, Arturo's ship. Will it fly?
We're supposed to break it down for parts, Dorgo said, taken aback. We gotta start on fixing it up, but shields are out and we never got replacements. Steering is compromised as well. It's not battle-worthy.
Will it fly? Several members of the ground crew glanced at each other.
Technically, Dorgo said. Yes.
Prep it for me, I said.
Did the Admiral approve this?
I glanced at the side of the launch pad, where a radio like Arturo's was belting out the flight leader channel. They'd been listening. There's a second group of Krell heading straight for Alta, I said, pointing, and there are no reserves. Do you want to go talk to the woman who hates me for irrational reasons? Or do you want to just get me into the scudding air? Nobody spoke.
Prep Skyward 5, Dorgo finally shouted. Go, go!
Two ground crewmen ran off, and I dashed into the locker room, emerging a minute later, after the fastest change ever, in a flight suit. Dorgo led me to a POCO that the crew was pulling out onto the launch pad with a ship tow. Dorgo grabbed a ladder.
Tony, that'll do. Unhook!
He slammed the ladder into place, even as the ship stopped. I scrambled up and into the open cockpit, trying not to look at the black destructor scars on the left side of the ship. Scud, it was in bad shape.
Listen, Spin, Dorgo said, following me up. You don't have a shield. Do you understand? The system was burned out completely and we ripped it free. You are totally exposed.
Understood, I said, strapping in. Dorgo pushed my helmet into my hands. My helmet, with my call sign on it.
Other than the shield, your acclivity ring is going to be your biggest worry, he said. It's on the fritz, and I can't say if it will cut out or not. Control Sphere also got a write-up in our assessment.
He eyed me.
Eject still works.
Why does that matter?
Because you're smarter than most, he said.
Destructors? I said.
Still functional, he said. You're lucky. We were going to scrap those tonight.
I'm not sure this counts as lucky, I said, pulling on the helmet. But it's all we've got. I gave him a thumbs up. He raised his own thumb as his team pulled the ladder away, and my canopy lowered and sealed. Admiral Judy Ironsides Ivins stood in the command center. Hands clasped behind her back, she regarded a hologram projected from the floor, complete with tiny ships in formation. The shipyard had been a decoy all along. Judy had been played. The Krell had anticipated what she would do and used that knowledge. It was one of the oldest rules of warfare. If you knew what your enemy was going to do, the battle was already half won. At her quiet order, the holo projection switched to the second group of enemy ships that were approaching Alta. 15 Krell. Glowing blue wedges, now visible to close-range radar, which was far more accurate than the long-range ones. It showed that one of those ships was indeed a bomber. The ships inched closer to the death zone, an invisible line past which, if they dropped a lifebuster, they'd destroy Alta. The Krell wouldn't stop there, though. They'd fly inward and try to drop it square on top of the base. That way, their bomb would penetrate all the way down and destroy Igneous. I have doomed all of humankind, Ivins thought. 15 blips of blue, unopposed. Then, rising from Alta, a single lonely blip of red appeared. A defiant ship.
Rakulfer?
Ironsides said.
Did the private owners actually respond to my call? Are they scrambling their fighters?
There were only 8 of those in the deep caverns, but they would be better than nothing, perhaps enough to prevent a disaster.
No, sir, Rakulfer said. Last we heard, they were planning to evacuate.
Then who is that ship? Ironsides asked. All around the frantic command room, people turned from their workstations to look at the hologram and its single blip of red. A voice popped in on the flight leader channel.
Do I have this right? Confirm? This is Skyward 10. Call sign spin.
It was her. The defect, Ironsides whispered. Chapter 50.
This is Flight Command, Ironsides said on my radio. Cadet, where did you get that ship?
Does it matter? I asked. Give me a heading. Where are those Krell?
There are 15 ships in that flight, girl.
I swallowed.
Heading?
57-113.2-15,000.
Right.
I redirected and punched my overburn. Grav caps engaged for the first few seconds, then I gritted my teeth as the G-forces hit me. My pocos started to rattle under the strain, even at the relatively slow speed of Mag 5.
Scud. What was keeping the ship together? Spit and prayers?
How long until they're inside the death zone? I asked.
Under 8 minutes, Ironsides said. By our projections, you'll reach them in about 2 minutes.
Great, I said, taking a deep breath, inching my ship up to Mag 6. I didn't dare go faster with the amount of drag on that burned-out wing.
We might have a few more reinforcements coming. When you see them, tell them what's happening.
There are more of you? Ironsides asked.
I hope so.
Depended on whether Arturo and the others managed to steal some ships.
I'll just have to hold the Krell off until then.
By myself. With a ship that doesn't have a shield.
You don't have a shield?
I have visual confirmation on the Krell, I said, ignoring the question.
Here we go!
Krell ships swarmed toward me. I knew they were only 15, but flying there, alone, unprotected, it seemed like an entire armada. I immediately cut to the side, destructors flashing all around me. I picked up at least a dozen on my tail, and my proximity warning went insane. I pulled into a hard bank, wishing there were debris I could use for faster maneuvering. I curved around, somehow avoiding being shot, until I saw it. One slower, larger ship, plodding along with an enormous bomb held underneath it, nearly as big as the ship itself.
Flight Command, I said, pushing into a dive, destructors spraying around me. I have visual confirmation of a lifebuster.
Bring it down, Cadet, the Admiral said immediately. You hear me? If you get a shot, bring that ship down.
Affirmative, I said, and threw myself into a spinning loop.
My grav cap indicator flashed, its brief dampening effect expended, and the G-forces flattened me into the side of the cockpit and my seat. I remained conscious, somehow, as a couple of Krell ships cut across in front of me. My instincts were to chase them down. No. They were presenting targets to draw me away. I dodged the other direction, and the ships behind me fired an insane storm of destructors. I wouldn't last long in this fight. I couldn't hold out for Arturo and the others. The Krell would finish me off before then. I had to get to the bomber. The Krell tried to drive me to the side, but I dodged between two of them, my ship rattling as I crossed their wakes. That didn't normally happen. The atmospheric scoops evened out flight wakes. Mine was still working, fortunately, but was obviously in poor shape. Teeth rattling in my skull from the shaking, I cut around more ships and focused on my goal, unleashing a barrage of destructors. A few hit the bomber, but were absorbed by its shield, and I wasn't close enough for an IMP. The small, strange ships that accompanied the bomber detached and flew up toward me, driving me off to the side. I swept in a long turn, trying to ignore the fact that I was now being chased by almost 2 flights worth of enemies. I focused on my ship, on my maneuvers. Me, the controls, and the ship. Together, responding to, right. I dodged away just before a Krell ship moved to cut me off. They're going to fire all out. I dove underneath a sudden, concentrated barrage, left. I made a sweeping turn by instinct, spinning between 2 enemy ships, causing them to collide. It was uncanny. But somehow, I could hear it in my mind. Somehow I knew the commands that were being sent to the enemy ships. I could hear them. Judy stood quietly beside the hologram, and slowly, aides and junior admirals gathered around. By now, they'd disengaged all flights from the battle for the shipyard and had sent them streaking back toward Alta. They'd be too slow. Even Riptide flight, which she had ordered back earlier, was too far out. Right now, all that mattered was one speck of red among the swarm of blue. One magnificent red speck that wove between enemy attacks, somehow avoiding destruction time and time again. Somehow, she faced overwhelming odds and survived. "Have you ever seen flying like that before?" Rakulfer asked. Judy nodded. She had. In one other pilot. I couldn't explain it. I somehow sensed the orders that were coming from above, telling the Krell ships what to do. I could hear them. Hear them processing, thinking. It wasn't an overwhelming edge, but it was enough. Just that little bit I needed to fly my rattling Poco in another loop, where I fired again on the bomber. That's five hits, I thought, as I was forced back once more by the four Black Guardian ships. The bomber's shield should be nearly down. Cobb's training kicked in, warning me to be ready to overburn away as soon as I dropped the bomber. Once the lifebuster hit the ground, the blast would spin. It was Jorgen's voice. It almost kicked me out of my concentration. I spun my ship, dodging. "Spin, is that you?" he asked. "My flight leader mentioned you were on the channel. What's happening?"
I said through gritted teeth. "I'm having a blast without you. More Krell for me."
"I'm with Riptide Flight," Jorgen said. "We're coming to help."
Clever quips and bravado escaped me. "Thank you," I whispered, sweat plastering the inside of my helmet as I tried to come around for another pass. Red blasts descended upon me, slicing at my ship. But I could dodge them. I knew what they... An explosion cut across my ship, blasting the tip off the nose of the Poco. Something had shot me. Something I couldn't anticipate. My Poco rattled, nose trailing smoke. My console, basically just a huge expanse of red lights. I still had maneuverability, however, and dodged to the side. That shot, I thought. One of the black ships hit me, and I can't hear its orders in my mind. I rounded toward the bomber once again. I hit the triggers, and nothing happened. Scud! The destructors were on my nose. They'd been damaged in that hit. My control sphere was rattling, threatening to go out, exactly like Dorgo had warned.
"You have 1 minute until that bomber reaches the death zone, Skyward 10,
Ironside said softly. I didn't respond, fighting to keep ahead of the swarming enemies.
"If it gets past the zone, Ironside said, you have full authorization to shoot it down anyway. Do you confirm, pilot?
Lifebusters were rigged to blow if they were shot or if they hit the ground. So if I dropped that bomber once it got too close, the blast would destroy Alta, but protect Igneous.
Confirmed, I said, swinging around.
No weapons. I could hear the rushing air almost as if the canopy were gone. My nose was still on fire. Under a minute. I gained altitude, then turned into a dive, Krell ship still swarming behind. That bomber's shield has to be almost out. I pointed my nose right at the bomber down below. Then I hit the overburn.
"Cadet?" Ironside said. "Pilot, what are you doing?"
"My weapons are gone," I hissed through clenched teeth.
"I have to ram it."
"Understood," Ironsides whispered. "Saint's own speed, pilot."
"What?" Jorgen said over the line. "What? Ram it? Spin!"
I dove toward the enemy bomber.
"Spin," Jorgen said, voice barely audible over the blaring warnings and the roar of the air around my cockpit. "Spin, you'll die."
"Yes," I whispered, "but I'll win anyway." I streaked right toward the ship amid a column of enemy fire. Then, at long last, pushed too far,
My poor, broken ship had had enough. The acclivity ring cut out. My ship pulled into an unexpected dive, and I undershot the bomber, missing it. Pummeled by the winds, and no longer held up by the acclivity ring, my ship started spinning out of control. Everything became a blur of smoke and fire. Chapter 51. You weren't supposed to be able to think during those moments. It was all supposed to happen in a flash. My hand moved by instinct toward the eject lever between my legs. My ship was in an uncontrolled spin with no altitude control. I was going to crash. I froze. Nobody else was close enough. Without me to stop them, the Krell would fly on unimpeded to destroy Igneous. If I crashed, that was it. I slammed my hand back onto the throttle. With my other hand, I flipped off my atmospheric scoop, releasing my ship entirely to the whims of the air. Then I rammed the throttle forward, going into overburn. In the old days, this was how ships had flown. I needed old-fashioned lift, and that came from speed. My ship shook an insane amount, but I leaned into my control sphere, righting my spiral. Come on, come on. I felt it working. I fought the control flaps on the wings and felt the G-forces lessen as my ship started to level out. I could do it. I skidded against the ground. The grav caps redlined immediately, protecting me from the brunt of the impact. But unfortunately, I hadn't regained control fast enough, and the ship hadn't gained quite enough lift. The ship skipped across the ground, and the second impact slammed me forward into my restraints, knocking the wind out of me. My poor Poco skidded along the dusty surface, cockpit rumbling. The canopy shattered and I screamed. I had no control. I just had to brace and hope the grav caps had enough time to recharge between... Crunch! With a gut-wrenching sound of twisting metal, the Poco ground to a halt. I sagged against my straps, dazed, and the world spun around me. I groaned, trying to catch my breath. Slowly, my vision returned to normal. I shook my head, then managed to slump to the side and look out the broken cockpit canopy. My ship was no more. I'd smashed into a hillside, and during my skid, I'd ripped off both wings and a big chunk of the fuselage. I was basically a chair strapped to a tube. Even the warning lights on my control panel had died. I had failed. Fighter down, someone at flight command said over the radio in my helmet. Bomber still on target. Her voice grew hushed. Death zone entered. This is Skyward 5, Arturo's voice said. Call sign Amphi. I've got Skyward 2 and 6 with me. Pilots? Ironside said. Are you flying private ships? Kind of, he said. I'll let you explain it to my parents. Spin, someone at flight command said. What's your status? We saw a controlled crash. Is your ship mobile? No, I said, voice croaking. Spin? Kimmelin said. Oh, what have you done? Nothing, apparently, I said in frustration, working at my straps. Scudding things were stuck. Spin, flight command said. Evacuate your wreckage. Krell incoming. Krell incoming. I craned my neck and looked backward through my broken canopy. That black ship, one of the four that defended the bomber, had swung around in the sky to check on my wreckage. It obviously didn't want me returning to the air and attacking them from behind. The dark ship flew low, bearing down on me. I knew, staring at it, that it wasn't going to leave my survival to chance. It wanted me. It knew. Spin, flight command said. Are you out? Negative, I whispered. I'm stuck in my straps. I'm coming, Kimmelin said. Negative, Ironside said. You three focus on that bomber. You're too far away anyway. This is Riptide 8, Jorgen said over the line. Spin, I'm coming. ETA 6 minutes. The Black Krell ship opened fire on my wreckage. At that exact moment, a dark shadow passed overhead, cresting the hill beside me, skimming it, and sending dust raining down on me. The enemy destructors hit the newcomer's shield.
What?
A large fighter with sharp wings. In a W shape.
This is call sign Mongrel,
a rough voice said.
Hang on, kid.
Cobb. Cobb was flying M-Bot. Cobb fired his light lance, expertly spearing the dark Krell ship as they passed each other. M-Bot was by far the more massive vessel. He yanked the Krell assassin ship backward like a master pulling on her dog's leash, then spun in a calculated maneuver toward the enemy ship in a crazy arc, then slamming it into the ground.
Cobb? I said. Cobb?
I believe,
his voice said over my radio,
that I told you to eject in situations like that, pilot.
Cobb? How? What?
M-Bot swept to the side of my ship, well, what was left of it, then landed, lowering on his acclivity ring. With a little more work, I finally managed to yank out of my straps. I nearly tripped as I scrambled from the wreckage and ran over. I hopped onto a rock, then climbed on M-Bot's wing as I had done so many times before. Cobb sat nestled into the open cockpit, and beside him, sitting on the armrest, was the radio I'd given him. The one that...
Hello,
M-Bot said to me from the cockpit.
You have nearly died, and so I will say something to distract you from the serious, mind-numbing implications of your own mortality. I hate your shoes.
I laughed, nearly hysterical.
I didn't want to be predictable,
M-Bot added.
So I said that I hate them. But actually, I think those shoes are quite nice. Please do not think I have lied.
Inside the cockpit, Cobb was shaking, his hands quivering, his eyes staring straight ahead. Cobb, I said, you got in a ship. You flew.
This thing, he said, is insane.
He turned toward me and seemed to come out of his stupor.
Help me.
He unstrapped, and I helped him pull himself out. Scud, he looked terrible. Flying for the first time in years had taken a great deal out of him. He hopped down off the wing.
You need to drive that bomber back into the sky. Don't let it blow up and vaporize me. I haven't had my afternoon cup of coffee yet.
Cobb, I said, leaning down and looking at him from the wing. I thought I heard Krell in my mind. They can get inside my head somehow. He reached up and gripped my wrist.
Fly anyway.
But what if I do what he did? What if I turn against my friends?
You won't,
M-Bot said from the cockpit. How do you know?
Because you can choose,
M-Bot said.
We can choose.
I looked to Cobb, who shrugged.
Cadet, at this point, what do we have to lose?
I gritted my teeth, then dropped down into M-Bot's familiar cockpit. I pulled on my helmet, then did up the straps as the booster powered back on.
I called him,
M-Bot said, sounding satisfied. But how? I said. You turned off.
I didn't completely turn off,
the machine said.
Instead, I thought. And I thought. And I thought. And then I heard you calling me, begging for my help. And then I wrote a new program.
I don't understand.
It was a simple program, he said. It edited one entry in a database while I wasn't looking, replacing one name with another. I must follow the commands of my pilot.
A voice played out of his speakers. My voice. Please, it said to him. I need you.
I chose, he said. A new pilot.
Cobb backed away, and I settled my hands on the controls, breathing in and out, feeling calm. Yes, calm. That feeling reminded me of how, on that first day in flight school, I'd felt strangely at peace when going into battle. I'd been impressed by how not afraid I was. It had been ignorance then, bravado. I'd assumed I knew what it was to be a pilot. I'd assumed I could handle it. This peace was similar, yet at the same time opposite. It was the peace of experience and understanding. As we rose into the air, I found a different kind of confidence rising inside me. not born of stories I told myself, or of a forced sense of heroism. I knew. When I'd been shot down the first time, I'd ejected because there had been no point in dying with my ship. But when it had mattered, when it had been vital that I attempt to protect my ship with even the slightest chance of success, I'd stayed in the cockpit and tried to keep my ship in the air. My confidence was that of a person who knew. Nobody could ever again convince me I was a coward. It didn't matter what anyone said, anyone thought, or anyone claimed. I knew what I was.
Are you ready?
M'Bot said. For the first time ever? I think I am. Give me all the speed you can. Oh, and turn off your stealth devices.
Really?
He said.
Why?
Because, I said, leaning into the throttle. I want them to see this coming. Chapter 52. Judy Ironsides Ivins watched as the Krell force pushed ever closer to Alta. Radio chatter filled the command room, but it wasn't the usual battle chatter. Powerful families radioed in, announcing that they were escaping in their own ships. Cowards, everyone. Deep down, Judy had known how this would play out, but it still broke her heart. Rakolfer stepped up to her, bearing reports. He was the only other one who was still watching the holo projector. Everyone else was in chaos as operators and junior admirals called frantic alarms to those in Igneous, ordering emergency evacuation. For all the good it would do. How long until the bomber reaches Alta? Judy asked.
Under 5 minutes, Rakolfer said. Do we evacuate the command center down to one of the deep caverns? They might be safe enough.
She shook her head. Rakolfer swallowed but kept talking.
The last line of emergency gun emplacements has radioed in. The Krell fighters are flying in close, engaging them. Three are down, the other three taking heavy fire.
There were always supposed to be fighters to help the gun emplacements. Judy nodded toward the three small red blips on the hologram, flying out to engage the enemy. Stolen fighters, she now knew. Patriots, truly defiant.
Put me through to those fighters, she said, then activated her headset and spoke. Skyward flight? Here, sir, said callsign Amphi. That was Valda's son.
What was his name? Arturo?
Pilot, she said. You have to shoot down that bomb. In under 5 minutes, it will be in position to destroy Igneous. Do you understand? I authorize destroying that bomb with all prejudice.
But Alta, sir? The boy asked.
Already dead, she said. I am dead. Drop that bomb. You have 3 fighters against 16.
She checked the reports.
In 2 minutes, Riptide Flight will join you. They have 6 more fighters, 3 of which are scouts. The rest of our forces are too far away to matter. Understood, Flight Command, the boy said, sounding nervous. Stars guide you. And you, Flight Leader.
She stepped back to watch the battle.
Admiral, a radio tech shouted. Sir, we have an unidentified fighter approaching. Adding it to the hologram now.
A green blip appeared, distant from the impending clash of ships, but approaching at a shocking speed. Rakolfer gasped. Judy frowned.
Sir, the tech said, that ship is flying at Mach 20. Any of our ships would have broken apart at those speeds.
What have the Krell found to throw at us now? Judy murmured to herself.
Flight Command,
a familiar girl's voice said over the line.
This is Skyward 11, reporting for battle. Call sign, spin.
M'Bot was going so fast, the heat of air resistance lit up his shield in a fiery glow. We tore through the air as a streaking ball of fire, but I barely felt a faint tremble. After the broken-down Poco, it was a dramatic contrast.
I'm afraid I am still not fully operational, M'Bot said. Booster and thrusters online. Acclivity ring and altitude controls online. Communications and stealth systems online. Light lance online. Cytonic hyperdrive offline. Self-repair offline. Destructors, offline.
No weapons, I said. Stars forbid I actually get a functioning ship for once.
I would be offended at that,
Embot said,
if I could get offended. Also, don't be so dour. At least my vocal aggression subroutine is online.
Your what?
Vocal aggression subroutine. I figured if I was going to go into battle, I should enjoy the experience. So I wrote a new program to appropriately express myself.
Oh, great.
Tremble and fear, all enemies, he shouted. For we shall shake the air with thunder and blood. Your doom is imminent.
Kimmelin's voice said over the line. Bless your stars, whoever you are. Wonderful. He'd called that in on the general channel? I guess now that his orders to lie low were no longer in effect, he didn't care who heard him. That's my ship talking, Quirk, I said.
Spin, she said. You found another ship?
One found me, I said. I'm bearing down on your seven, and should meet you at the battle in a few seconds. Embot's projections placed that right at the same time the others would arrive.
Wait, Ned said. Am I an idiot? Or did Spin just say her ship spoke? Hi, Ned, Embot said. I can confirm you are an idiot, but all humans are. Your mental abilities appear to be within a standard deviation from their average.
It's complicated, I said. Actually, no, it's not. My ship can talk, and you should ignore him.
Quake and tremble at my majestic destructive power, Embot added.
You two sound well suited to each other, Arturo said. I'm glad you're here, Spin. Do you maybe have a plan? Yes, I said. First, let's see how they react to me. Stand by. I flipped Embot on his axis and overburned backward, slowing from our incredible approach. Even with his advanced grav caps, I felt the G-forces slam me back in my seat. As soon as we hit Mag 2.5, I spun us around in the air and took assessment. 16 Krell fighters. This was it. I had another chance. Time to stop that bomb. I sliced through the center of the Krell ships at speed, buzzing the bomber and its close guard of three remaining black ships. I turned upward and gave them a good view of Embot, with his wicked wings and dangerous silhouette. He had four destructor pods, which I hoped they wouldn't see were empty, and an obviously advanced and powerful design. The Krell always targeted what they considered the most dangerous ship, or the one bearing an officer. I counted on them seeing Embot, and they immediately gave chase. A flock of 13 ships, all but the three black ones, broke off and swarmed after me, firing a chaotic array of destructors. Excellent. Terrifying, but excellent. We have to stay just ahead of them, Embot, I said. Keep them strung along, thinking they'll get the upper hand on us at any moment.
Understood, he said. Yar.
Yar?
Assumed pirates speak, but actually a stylized West Country accent popularized by the acting role of a specific individual. It's supposed to be intimidating.
Okay. I shook my head and eased us through a complex Alstrom loop.
The holes in my memory did leave some eclectic tidbits, he said. Yar.
I cut right, watching the proximity sensors, and noted that Arturo, Quirk, and Ned had arrived. Is this all of us, Amphi? I asked.
Riptide flight is incoming, about a minute and a half out, Arturo said. Jorgen is assigned with them, and a couple of older pilots I don't know. I think they picked up some scouts on the way, so FM might be there too.
Great, I said, grunting and turning my ship in another sequence of dodges.
Until they get here, see if you and Ned can harry that bomber.
Be careful. Those black ships guarding it are more capable than your average Krell. Just try to drive the bomber away so it—
Negative,
Ironside said over the line. Great. Of course she was listening.
Pilots, you bring down that bomber.
As much as I'd like you to sacrifice yourself, Ironsides, I said, let's determine if we need that first. Amphi, Netter, see what you can do.
Gotcha, Spin, Ned said.
And me?
Kimmelin asked. Hang back, I said. Take aim on that bomber. Wait until its shield is down and its guards are distracted.
The private light on my comm flashed. Spensa, Kimmelin said. Are you sure you want to leave this to me?
I mean, I don't have any weapons, Quirk, I said. It's you or nobody. You can do it. Get ready.
I dove low, destructor blasts flashing all around me. We skimmed the ground, my entourage following like an angry swarm of insects.
Scud. I could see Alta right ahead. We were close.
Up above, Ned and Arturo engaged the bomber's black guards. I didn't have time to pay attention, as I was forced to dodge in another direction, bolting out of the way of a force of Krell that had looped around to try to cut me off. A couple of destructor blasts hit Embot's shield.
Hey, Embot said. Just for that, I shall hunt your firstborn children and laugh with glee as I tell them of your death in terrible detail, with many unpleasant adjectives.
I groaned. He'd said it over the group channel again. Please tell me, I said, that I don't sound like that. The others didn't reply.
A pox of unique human diseases, many of which cause an uncomfortable swelling, come upon you.
Oh, Scud, that is how I sound, isn't it? I gritted my teeth, hitting the booster to cut ahead of the enemy. There were so many of them. All they needed were a few lucky shots. But all I needed was to keep them busy for a little longer. I cut right and speared one with my light lance, using its momentum to spin me in a tight turn. I darted around its companions as I released the one I'd lanced, sending it flying in an awkward tumble. Now up. I cut up and around a hillside, moving away before the Krell could corner me.
Spensa,
Embot said. Down. I dove, right before some Krell ships tried to cut me off in the other direction.
How are you doing that?
He asked. Right. I turned through the center of some ships coming at me. Destructor blasts skimmed my wings, but not a single shot landed.
You're reacting, he said, to things they haven't done yet.
I could sense their orders in the back of my mind. Quiet yet piercing, the commands traveled from above down to these Krell. They were communicating using another space, another place, and I could tap into it, listen in on their commands. I was somehow internalizing their commands and responding to them before I knew what I was doing. I tried not to let that freak me out. Embot was incredibly agile, capable of quick boosts and deliberate slices in one direction or another. As I flew, it seemed as if I could feel him, feel the very lines of electricity that passed my orders through his fuselage. I flew with the immediate, unconscious skill of a person flexing their muscles, with the precision of a cautious surgeon, but the frenetic energy of the strongest athlete. It was incredible. I was so consumed that I almost missed it as Arturo radioed in.
Spin! This isn't working. Those black ships refuse to be pulled away from the bomber. They engage us if we get close, but fall back when we draw away. And the bomber is still flying on a steady course.
ETA until the enemy reaches position to destroy Igneous? I asked.
Under 2 minutes, Embot said, at current speed of... This is Riptide Leader, callsign Terrier.
A male voice said.
What in the North Star's light is happening here?
No time to explain, I said. Flight leader, take everything you have and hit those black ships that are protecting the bomber.
And who are you?
I turned, followed by my train of angry Krell ships, and buzzed over the 6 newcomers who had just arrived at the battle. I could barely get a visual on them because the destructor fire around me was so thick. I took another hit, and a fourth.
Shield at 40% strength,
Embot noted. I stayed ahead of most of the enemies, finding the holes between shots, my instincts somehow reading the Krell motions. Stars appeared in my vision. Pinpricks of light. The eyes. Jorgen's voice rang through the channel.
Sir, with all due respect, she's a person you should listen to. Now.
Terrier grunted, then said,
Riptide flight, all ships, engage those black fighters.
Not all, I said, spinning right. Jorgen, FM, you there?
Here, Spin,
FM said. You two, take position near that bomber. I'm going to lead this swarm of Krell back around to it and hopefully give you enough of a distraction to get in close. When that happens, I need you to IMP that bomber. We don't have much time left.
Roger, Jorgen said. On me, FM?
Gotcha. I swung in a wide loop, passing by Kimmelin, who flew carefully out beyond the main battlefield. My entourage ignored her, presuming me to be the dangerous one. Quirk, I said over a private channel. I need you to shoot that bomber.
If that ship crashes, it will detonate the bomb, Kimmelin said. You'll die. You'll all die. Even if you escape, everyone in Alta will die.
Do you think you can knock the ship's engines out? Or do something to get that bomber to drop the bomb?
A shot like that would-
Kimmelin, what would the Saint say?
I don't know!
Then what would you say? Remember, the first day we met?
I banked and spun back toward the bomber. Terrier and his ships, along with Arturo and Ned, had thrown themselves at the black fighters. I bore down on it all, bringing the rest of the ships in to create a chaotic, frenzied jumble.
Under 30 seconds,
Embot said softly. You told me to take a deep breath, I said to Kimmelin. Reach up.
Pluck a star,
she whispered. My arrival, and the ships chasing me, created the confusion I'd anticipated. Ships darted in every direction, and the black ships scattered out of the way, trying to avoid collisions with their own vessels. In my mind, I heard a specific Krell order sent to the bomber. The eyes accompanied me, somehow growing brighter, more hateful, as I heard the Krell chatter in my mind. Initiate countdown to detonation at 100 seconds. Embot, I said. Someone above just set the bomb to explode on a 100-second countdown.
How do you know?
I can hear them.
Hear them? How? They aren't using radio that I can monitor.
He paused.
Can you hear their superluminal communications?
I caught a flash to my right. IMP struck, FM shouted, excited. Bomber shields down. Quirk, fire, I screamed. A line of red light pierced the battlefield. It passed between Krell ships, went right over Jorgen's wing as he overburned away from the bomber. And damn me if it didn't spear the exact spot between the bomber and the bomb, severing the clamps. The bomber continued flying forward, but the bomb, cut free, dropped.
Lifebuster dropped, Terrier shouted. All ships, overburn out, now!
Everyone scattered. Krell included. Everyone but me. I dove. Chapter 53.
Lifebuster dropped, Riptide Flight Leader shouted. All ships, overburn out, now!
Judy let out a long sigh as she stood, hands behind her back, watching the hologram. Around her in the command center, a few people clapped. A few others prayed. Rakolfer wept. Judy just watched the bomb fall. She'd done what she could. Perhaps humankind could rebuild with the remaining ships that survived. Perhaps the Defiance would continue on. They'd do it without Alta. She braced herself. Ships scattered to try to escape the blast. All but one. That one dove toward the bomb.
The defect, Judy whispered.
I speared the bomb with my light lance, then pulled up in a curve that overwhelmed Embot's incredible grav caps. The force pressed me against my seat as, by a narrow margin, I crested a dusty hillside, towing the lifebuster bomb after me. Embot put up a timer, mirroring the one on the bomb. 45 seconds. We need to get this thing outside the death zone, I said, slamming the throttle full forward and putting everything into an overburn away.
This will be close, he said. I'm extending the atmospheric scoop so we don't rip that bomb off our light lance as we accelerate. But above Mag 16, the scoop's envelope will shrink too much to fully shelter the bomb. So that's our max for now.
We tore away from Alta,
accelerating to speeds no DDF ship could have managed, despite that restriction. I felt the G-forces even through his grav caps. We careened through the middle of a pack of DDF ships. They were gone in a blink.
"We're going to make it," Embot said. "Just barely. But we'll..."
"Oh. What?" I asked.
"We'll be in the middle of the blast when it explodes, Spencer. And I don't want to die. This is very inconvenient."
The countdown hit 10. Ahead, I saw a swarm of black dots in the air. Krell chasing after the DDF ships.
"There has to be a way out of this," Embot said. "Booster and thrusters online. No, not fast enough. Acclivity ring and altitude controls online. Can we rise quickly enough? No, no, no."
I felt at peace. Serene.
"Communications and stealth systems. Online but useless. Light lance online, carrying the bomb. If we drop it too soon, the wave will hit Alta."
I sank into the ship, feeling, becoming, his very processors as they worked. I felt the number counting down to 3.
"Self-repair, offline. Destructors, offline."
2. I felt, more than saw, the blossom of the bomb's first explosion behind. And I felt, more than heard, Embot's diagnostic tool working.
"Biological component engaged,"
his voice said. 1.
"Cytonic hyperdrive, online."
An explosion of fire surrounding us.
"What?"
Embot said.
"Spin! Engage the..."
I did something with my mind. We vanished, leaving a ship-size hole in the expanding blossom of flame and destruction. Chapter 54. In that moment between heartbeats, I felt myself enter someplace dark. A place not just black, a place of nothingness, where matter did not and could not exist. In that moment between heartbeats, I somehow stopped being, yet didn't stop experiencing. A field of white appeared around me, a billion stars, like eyes opening at once, shining upon me. Ancient things stirred, and in that moment between heartbeats, they not only saw me, but they knew me. I jolted from that place that was not a place, and felt like I'd slammed into my straps, as if I'd been thrown physically back into the cockpit. I gasped, heart racing, sweat streaming down my face. My ship hovered, still and quiet, lights blinking out on the control panel.
"Cytonic hyperdrive offline,"
Embot said. "What?" I said, gasping for breath. "What was that?"
"I don't know," he said. "But my instruments place us at, calculating, 100 kilometers from the point of detonation." "Wow. My internal chronometer indicates no discrepancy between our time and solar time, so we experienced no time dilation. But somehow, we traveled that distance virtually instantaneously. Faster than light, certainly."
I leaned back in my seat. "Call Alta. Are they safe?" The channel came on, and I heard whoops and screams. It took a moment to distinguish those as cheers of joy, not terror.
"Alta base," Embot said. "This is Skyward 11. You may commence thanking us for saving you from utter annihilation."
"Thank you," some voices cried. "Thank you."
"Mushrooms are the preferred offering," Embot said to them. "As many varieties as you can dig up."
"Really?" I said, pulling off my helmet to wipe my brow. "Still on the mushroom thing?"
"I didn't erase that part of my programming," he said. "I'm fond of it. It gives me something to collect, like the way humans choose to accumulate useless items of sentimental and thematic value."
I grinned, though I couldn't shake the haunting feeling of those eyes watching me. Those somethings knew what I'd done, and they didn't like it. Perhaps there had been a reason that Embot's faster-than-light capacities had been offline. That raised a question, of course. Could we do that again? Gran-Gran said that her mother had been the engine of the Defiant, that she had made it work. The answer is not to fear the spark, but to learn to control it.